Okay, so I'm going to start by quoting you back to you from our last interview. The very last question, pretty much the last thing you wrote. You said, "I'm more than ready for." I was asking you about, you know, what you're imagining life looking like when you got out in 2019. You said, "I'm more than ready for whatever, and my life on the outside will look like whatever way I decide it will, because I know who I am and what Larry Brandt is supposed to be doing." Which, of course, begs the question: now that you're back on the outside, what is Larry Brandt doing?
Basically, everything I plan to do. A little bit of adjustments here and there, because you can write out a plan. Nothing's going to go according to the plan, so you have to make adjustments. But I didn't let any setbacks get in the way. And that was a mistake I had before when I was younger. I was always told to do this and do that, school, work, stuff like that. But I never understood why. Going through what I just went through, I understand why. Because the consequences of a lot of things, you know, it would take you away from everything you're trying to do. For instance, it could take years to build a career to be whatever you want to be. Years. It takes 1 second to lose everything. And then you set back, you start all over. Sometimes you may not be able to recover. Mm-hmm. So now you understand why. I understand why my grandfather went to work every day, why he was a pastor, and why he always had rules, and why we couldn't do this, and why we had to stay away from those kids, and why we couldn't go into those neighborhoods. I get that now. So now that's just the way I'm walking, keeping everything very simple. And being with the family like I'm supposed to be.
Nice. So I know while you were inside, you were keeping your mind active in a lot of ways. You were writing poetry, you were teaching classes, you were taking college classes. Other than the artwork, which one of those pursuits are any of those pursuits still in your life today? Are you carrying that stuff forward? Or are you still doing any of that, the teaching, the poetry, the Toastmasters, any of that?
Well, directly, not so much right now, but I'm looking to get back into that. But in all of those things I was doing, I acquired certain tools of self-discipline, of how to keep myself focused, how to analyze certain things, and how to navigate and how to deal with people. And all those activities I was doing there, I was thinking, okay, I'm going to do this when I get home, I'm going to do that when I get home. And all the time, it wasn't those activities specifically. It was what I got from being involved with those activities. And I'm still in contact with like maybe 20 or 30 guys that was involved with me in different programs, and we're still in contact now. Everybody's basically following the same principles in their own way. It's just we all in different fields that are closely related still. And we basically all took from the same situations and learn, hey man, this is what we need to be doing. We could do a whole lot more way over here, away from the negative stuff, even sticking together. And it's really simple. Staying out of trouble is a lot easier than we thought it was. I mean, it's a beautiful thing, because you don't have to worry about a lot of things. You live in opposite of what you were taught, especially on the wrong side of things. It seems easy, it seems fun, but for everything you do, it's a lot of other stuff that comes with it that you have to own up to down the line. And it's very expensive. Not money-wise, it can be, but it'd be very expensive time out of your life. So I've taken away from the Toastmasters thing, which was a lot of leadership situations, a lot of patience, a lot of analyze things, because I was the Toastmaster president for the last year. I was in the program for 2 years. The Poetry Club, how to work with other individuals, how to listen to them, how to create ideas by combining our thoughts together and things like that. I was also an institutional plumber as well, so I learned how to figure things out. I learned how to listen, how to work things out. And if something looks hard, it doesn't mean it's impossible. You have to take your time and breathe a little bit and look at it from a different way and then just push through it. So not directly have I been doing a lot of those things, but I've been using what I learned from them to get through life now.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, that was my next question. I was going to say, do you see any of those old pursuits paying off now in kind of emotional ways, practical ways? But I mean, that pretty much just said. I mean, that pretty much answers it. That you kind of took the skill set, It's like, yeah, maybe you're not giving speeches anywhere, but like you still pull out those threads and use those skills in other places. All right, that makes sense. Last time we spoke, you talked about how you said in isolation, most of life's distracting entertainment is stripped away. And now you're on the outside, and obviously distractions everywhere. We got the whole social media thing. We got the 24-hour news cycle, all this type of stuff. So, I mean, obviously prison's not some kind of serene environment in which to create, but it's a different type of noise out here. So how are you dealing with all kind of the new distractions, and are they affecting your artistic practice in any way, do you feel?
Well, actually, okay, so you go inside, you lose everything. The number one thing you lose is control of your own life. So you don't even have control of your own money. When you can see your family, anything. But individuals usually freak out from that, have breakdowns, whatever, immediately going in, because it's a abnormal environment compared to the real world. But what I learned was from a lot of studying, the number one factor what guided me through that, I look at it, studying Malcolm X and the Black Panthers. I've read everything they've, probably most of them guys that people have written. Malcolm X stated that a short period of incarceration can benefit any man if he has a mindset of what he wants to do, because you don't have the distractions in life. There are no late night parties. There are no football games, basketball games. There are no girlfriends hanging out, no people calling. You don't have any of that. But you want that, but a lot of times it gives people the opportunity to go the wrong way and not do what they're supposed to do. So you sit down, you figure out, first of all, how you got to prison. Most people don't do that. And they think that it is the crime they committed or the act they committed or the people they were with that got them into prison. And that's never the issue. The issue is whatever you did at that moment, there was a lot of little small incidents that led up to you thinking it was okay to do that. So it was your thinking that got you into prison, not that act. Mm. So once you sit back and realize, now, okay, I need to correct me. Most people go in, they blame, okay, it was a girlfriend that did this, or my buddy told on me, or the police lied on me, or I didn't have this, my parents didn't do that. Yeah, all that could be true, but at the same time, it was your thinking. Whether your thinking was something you chose to do or something that just built up from the way you was grown, you was raised. However, you still need to correct that. Once you do that, then you realize, okay, you make conscious decisions now. You understand why to make these decisions. And sometimes somebody's supposed to be your friend, you gotta realize, if he wants you to go, for instance, a lot of guys get out of prison from the streets and they come home. Their friends approach them, give them a bunch of money, give them some drugs, and give them a gun and a car. Those are not your friends. You think you need that stuff. Now, I need your car, I need a place to stay, I need some money for some clothes, I take them shopping, but those are not your friends. They just gave you all the tools you need to go back to prison. Mm-hmm. And that's, they gonna just give you a car, some money, say, hey man, we hope the best for you and let you go. Those are friends. The other guys are not. They're putting you right back in because they want you over there with them because they want to use you again. And most guys don't see that thing because I don't have anywhere else to go. I got to go with this. No. I had a brother come out of prison and he chose to go to a halfway house for a while because he got out of a different state. To stay away from all that. The parents, the family was ready for him, but he didn't want to do that. He didn't want to live in a house with, you know, the parents because he figured he was too grown for that. I told him, you crazy. We have a family that have houses. We have brother and sister have homes. Go live with somebody you know you have to worry about. But he did it his way. He's still like up and down, struggles sometimes, but he hasn't been back. He's doing it the way he want to do it. We respect that. But being home now, I realize that it's all about the way I think and I analyze things according to, you know, being a chess player. My father taught us to play chess when he was younger. Every move you make, you think about what's going to happen two or three steps down the line. And then you make your decision. Mm-hmm. And once you get used to doing that, the process becomes quicker. So you'll need a bunch of time because you may not have that time to make the right decision. It becomes a reflex of doing the right thing. And then from there, just practice. That's it.
And in terms of your like when you sit down to, you know, to draw, like you sit down to you know, to create some art, do things feel noisier out here when you, like, you sit down trying to do something but your phone's going off, like that type of stuff?
Yeah, phone's going off. My lady's in the house. She's talking to me. She got questions. She just want to hang out. What you doing? I'm drawing. She don't understand. I need, because I'm used to, I can go in the room and close the door. And my guys that I knew are there, they already knew. Oh, Larry's in the room. Don't even bother. Or I can go to the day room and sit at the table. People everywhere. I've learned to tune that out. And guys see me doing that. Nobody would say anything to me. Unless it's a new guy that just came in. He sees somebody drawing. Oh, wow, he's drawing. He'd come and sit down and say, hey, man, what you doing? I just look at him. And I put my head down. I keep doing what I'm doing. And he'll lean over and see what I'm doing. And somebody come to him, one of my buddies, and tap him on the shoulder. And he look up and he get up. I see he leave. He'll come to me later and say, hey, man, listen, I apologize. I understand that. My friends told me, man, leave him alone. For real, because I just, after wait a while, I give him time to figure it out. If he doesn't figure it out, then I'll just be very direct. I would just say, leave. They might think that's rude, but I don't know at that time because I'm actually aggravated. And other than being vulgar about it, which is I want to be, I will calm down. It still come across intense because it's the moment that I'm in. But yeah. I just say, hey, man, leave. And then they figured out down the line, I will apologize to them later. But right then, I need my space to be my space. So at home, it's different. You know, I can't talk to my lady like that.
Right, right.
I can't declined my mother's phone call, or my father's phone call. So I'll take the call. Hey, what's going on? What you doing? I'm drawing. I'm working. Okay, cool. I'm not going to bother, but then yada, 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 yada. Anyway, so it's an adjustment. So pretty much I have to steal free time. And just like now, sometimes my lady, I say, I got something to do all day Saturday. So I'm going to be moving around. She said, okay, well, what you got to do? I said, I got some stuff to do. I can't run down everything because through the course of the day, I got to improvise. Stuff changes. And so she, okay, I ain't going to bother you. And she called me. Well, she texted. And she called. And she texted. So, I mean, we're going to have to work on getting used to it. Sometimes you need space because I'm used to doing it. Mm. Not to be bothering anybody. And that's the comfort that you had in prison. In life, streets, you really can't do that. When you got family and friends and responsibilities. But, I mean, it's cool. Now I just have to sit down sometime. Kind of like just tell her, so I need to draw half hour time. Just that. No, I'm saying she go upstairs. Well, I have this beauty. I can't just sit down and expect her to figure that. I have to say this to her because it is adjustments for her as well to figure out. So it is. It does feel weird. Have to work to get myself back into that space, that zone, the headspace. Turn on some music, whatever. Now later, I'm gonna have to give me some old headphones because I'm used to putting on headphones and it completely kills everything. Mm-hmm. Because I get the music playing, I still hear something going on in the gangway next door, police cars drive past, or anything. She might do something upstairs, drop something, I hear that, and can pull me out. But other than that, it's a challenge, but I appreciate it, you know. But after the wedding, for sure, and this other stuff I got going on, I'm definitely going to have my selected time to draw and get back into teaching classes because I want to do video stuff to where I do instructional classes on video and post that kind of thing. And then I have in-person classes as well, so I will have the time to do that.
Yeah, yeah, but after the wedding, yes. Let me see, where am I? Oh, so art has obviously always been a family affair for you, but now it's literally a family business because you and your sister Liz and your father Larry Sr., you run an art shop called Brent Art.
Yes.
You've cited the ongoing dialogue you have with your father as a really key source of creative insight for you.
Right.
Going back years. So can you talk about finally getting to physically be a part of this artistic lineage in your family that, you know, you were, of course, involved in from afar, but to actually physically finally get to be, with everyone, now that you're home, and all of you have, you know, all these artists all together in the same, you know, under one roof, essentially.
Right. Well, initially it was fun and strange because I'm being home, of course, and then sitting down, we had a few meetings. My father always wanted to have a meeting since I got home, me, him, and his sister about the ideas and things like that. So it's been really cool because always for him, I could call home for an idea or something like that. And he always say something that sparked an idea or a sense of motivation, inspiration. But one thing he's always said about art that if he can see it, you can draw it or you can do it. I used to think that, okay, I was always doing portrait art. I look at a picture, recreate it for somebody, maybe change a little here and there, or I look at a couple of pictures and put images together and create stuff like that. But that's not what he was talking about because his stuff always came out of his head. He would have a dream or something and wake up and next morning he's painting, well, he used to always draw with an ink pen. But he, the next morning he's drawing something. And I'm looking around for the picture where it came from. He had a dream. Or he had an idea, or something popped in his head, or he heard a song, something came in his head. He's also a musician, so he gets a lot of ideas from his old music stuff he used to play. And I think my brother bought him a bass guitar a few years ago for his birthday. And sometimes he'd go and mess around with that, and something comes up, and he'll start drawing something from that. But when he said, if you can see it, you can draw, he means whatever you see, period, whether it's in your head or whether it's in your eyesight. Mm. And I took a lot from that. So sometimes I get an image in my head to be a strictly smudge or something like that, but I know it is. And down the line, it ended up coming to be helpful in something else. Mm. I just scripture it down, date it, and sign it, and put it aside. And now what I do that my lady said, had to catch her a few times, I'll come back looking for it. And I said, hey, I had some paper, some scratch paper. I threw it in the garbage. What? Well, you should have some lines, those drawers. Where's the garbage? You took it out yet? She said, no. I go in the garbage, put it out. She don't understand. I lay it out again, and I put a sign next to all of it and say, don't touch. And then down the line, I end up putting some things together. She's like, oh, I see. Yeah, I see. This is my drawing table, and I have it here. I put it here. I don't want it in the garbage. But the artist process is strange for everybody, but being able to talk to them, we've consulted each other a lot of time. I think when I first got home, me and my sister Liz did a painting together. Mm. Because the client wanted it to be in acrylic paint. I don't use acrylic. Either pencil, graphite, ink pen, or oil. Acrylic is a headache. It dries too fast. So I basically did the basic stuff for setting up, forming the shadows and the color scheme, stuff like that. Then she would come in and just kind of like finish it off and blend everything together. And it was really cool to do that. Mm. But as things went on, my father's kind of slowing down, so he's not, you know, as much active as he used to be. Liz is busy all over the place on the internet with Facebook and doing these paint parties. And I've just been working to rebuild my life. But we still been consulting with each other, so she might have a call and say, hey, I got somebody who wants something done. I can't do this. Can you check it out? I'll take care of it. Or I might start it out for her. She might just need the sketch started. And I send it to her. So, oh, okay, now I got it. She goes from there. But it's been cool. We've been sharing more ideas and actually doing actual projects because of me still rebuilding everything. But I'm getting to the point that I'm getting back to having more time to do that. But for us to be here together, it's been really cool, awesome, and feels good. Feels good.
Yeah, that's cool about you guys being able to collaborate on a piece together. That's really good to hear. So in our last interview, you talked about developing the perspective that that your art has to say something. And I imagine your artistic practice these days is taken up largely by the commissions that you're doing. But that said, what is the work that you're doing now saying, and how is that different from what your work used to say years ago when you were locked up?
Well, I guess when I was locked up, I used to see different things. Different images, whether it be in a magazine or whether it be on a poster or something, and it would catch my eye. So I would get those posters, those pictures, and put them together and draw something and create something else. And what it's supposed to say, I don't know. I just want to see if I can make it fit together and then let people figure that out. Since I've been here, I've been doing more portrait art, of course, and I have been working on a original piece, but I kind of put some ideas together and just let people figure out what they wanted to figure out like that. So. Still fun, but still the only challenge now is having the time to do that. Well, before I could have hours or days to do what I want to do. Now I don't have that. I have to steal again, set a time for these 3 hours, I'm going to do this and do that if I can get that done without any interruption. But now basically I just want to my art to say who I am. And individuals look at it, they can tell, because it ain't so much as I found the message between the images, it's the way you do it. Mm-hmm. As far as, because people, I learned from what people was analyzing my art. I learned about my art from listening to people talk about it. Mm-hmm. And they say mine is different from other people because mine is always very detailed, it's very exact, it's very clean and things like that. Some guys, it's kind of like messy or like extra loose. And I used to look at that as like, okay, it's not good art because it's this way and that way. But no, whatever his style is what his style is. It's not good or bad, it's just what it is. So you accept it for what it is, and then, okay, now you can be able to determine his art from her art, from his art, because of the way it is done. So I didn't realize that I was creating my own style by the way I was doing things, different from everybody else's, but I was, and that helped a lot. So I put stuff together, I see something I like, and I put it together and just see how it turns out and let people basically tell me what they see or what it is when they look at it. So I guess from that, I got used to doing things a certain kind of way, which is I accepted as being my style. Mm. You know, I like stuff detailed, I like it exact, I like it clean, and I like it be eye-catching to where it might help somebody else get an idea about something. And so a lot of times people come up with stuff or a description of my artwork that I've never even considered.
Right, right, right.
From how they see it, but that's what art is. It's different for everybody.
Yeah, that makes sense. So a lot of creative people talk about time spent, like walking or driving, you know, the time that they get in these kind of solitary moments. As really key to their process, and you know, it's like they're alone, they're out for a walk, they come up with their new ideas. So I'm just curious, does when you're driving the truck, does that have any of that kind of meditative, generative quality for your artistic practice? Do you get good ideas when you're on the road? Do your mind start wandering? Do you start to dream some stuff up like when you're driving?
Yeah, all the time. But mostly in the form of for writing. Like poetry stuff, I get an idea, I hear a line or a statement or something like that, I listen to a song, something comes up. The problem is, I can't write when I'm driving, I can't stop, I can't reach for anything, so sometimes I will use my phone and put it on video and record my voice saying something and write it down later, but sometimes I forget to write it down. So while it does offer me opportunity to think and come up with ideas and stuff to pop up, I don't always get a chance to retain it. But it does happen. So it lets me know the process or the inspiration is still there. Is it that when I sit myself down, you know, get a chance to do that long enough, I can hone in on it and, you know, utilize it and put it together and stuff like that. Again, in the coming days, I get more of my personal time back and I'll be able to really put stuff together and focus more on, you know, being creative and stuff like that. Because sometimes I could be doing a drawing, an idea for a poem will come to mind. I'll stop drawing and start writing. And I'll stop drawing, start writing, go back to my drawing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes my lady has seen me do that, and she does this thing. She just comes and just stands there and lean over me. And I go back and forth, it's fine. But then she wants to ask questions. Why are you doing this? I said, can I just do it? We'll talk about it later. But you don't have to get an attitude about it and walk away. Now she's mad all day. And now that's a distraction. It could be much, but people, she's learning though. Because I guess most people don't live with an artist. And so you have to come to the point to learn to give the person their space when they're busy. You know, just let them be. Talk about it later, no problem with that. But at that moment, don't say anything, don't ask me anything, don't touch me, you know, all that kind of stuff. Just let me be. So it helps though, but yeah, driving, but I can't daydream too much. I have to focus on what I'm doing, because you can't daydream and look up and you're drifting in your lane, mm-hmm. or you miss the exit and now you got to come back. But it does. It comes to me all the time on the road, especially when I'm going like down 65, it's a long ride coming up and there's nothing out about there but open land, open field. So you have a lot of time for stuff to come, which is cool sometimes. But yeah, things come to me all the time when I'm driving.
Yeah, no, me too. I like that. That's my last question, which is also a quote from you that popped out of me when I was looking at our last interview. And you said, at one point, I allowed the pressures of prison, to encourage self-destruction. But that's been adjusted. Disappointment, anger, heartache, rejection, and loneliness are no longer crushing to me. In fact, anger has been my best source of fuel and motivation. Which makes complete sense to me from the situation you were in. But obviously, you know, anger as a driver, you know, is corrosive. Like it works, but it hurts us. You know, it wears us down over time. And so I'm curious, these days, what is your, if anger was your best source of motivation back then, what is your best source of motivation now? What's driving you? What's your new fuel?
Well, I tell you, actually, anger is still there, but it wasn't. It hasn't been corrosive for me to the point of it's about how you use it. It's not necessarily a bad or good thing. It's just an emotion. And people say, I use it. So I use that to draw. I use that to work out. That was my response to my situation. I wasn't going to let the situation just chew me up like a lot of guys do. Become institutionalized really easy. And that's a mental lock once it happens in your brain, pretty much stuck. But for me, my motivation now is for all those people that stood by me, basically my family, I'm owning up to that. I'm the eldest of six, so I'm a big brother. I'm the oldest child, my mother and father, so that's a responsibility. I have a granddaughter, that's a responsibility. I have a son I'll be 30 this year. I've been gone most of his life. That's motivation. For every job that I got, I've had 7 doors closed in my face. So for the first 18 months out, I had 7 jobs. I wasn't fired from any. I got one job. It was on the contract. The contract ended, so I lost that job for 4 months. I got another company for a couple weeks. They were trying to, almost like a sweatshop. I went from there to UPS, seasonal driving, package delivery, but that ended. Got with a friend that owned a truck, drove from him for a couple months, then the pandemic happened, so his company kind of went to slow down. Then I got with another company, a little bit bigger. He owned a few trucks. I rode with him for 6 months. But it was like everything I've had been like temporary stuff. And then the company I'm with now is called Geneva Transport out of Bolingbrook. I've been with this company almost 2 years. And everything's been really cool. W-2, above board, healthcare, everything, because that's the type of stuff I want. I wanted benefits. I wanted a 401k. That's what I was pushing for, and I finally got it, which is why I'm there. But the motivation is, before I got this particular job, everybody else just told me no. And all they did was fuel me to push harder. Because other guys went different ways about maintaining their lifestyles, about making having a source of income. I say, no, I'm not going to go around. Some guys just had to be self-employed in order to make it because they got tired of the doors being closed in their face. I said, no, I'm going to make them get me through. I'm going to get these benefits. I'm going to get this property because I'm a landlord as well, so they're buying property. So I went through all of that. And I got a lot of things done that most guys just don't want to tolerate or have the patience for. But this is where I want to do it because this is the page I was on before I got locked up. I just got sidetracked. So with that, my motivation is everything I know I'm supposed to be and should have been doing, I'm owning up to it now, especially the responsibility of showing my family they did not support me for nothing. and people believing in me is a very strong sense of inspiration and motivation. But I still get mad about certain things when I try to do something when people tell me no simply because of something that happened in my life almost 30 years ago. Mm. And I ask the question, who is the same person they are today as they was 30 years ago? Even if he's a bad person, he's not the same. He's worse or he's better, but he's not the same. So take me on what I'm doing now. Take me on the merits of what I'm doing now. And that's how I operate. So I don't tell myself no. I let them tell me no. And I make them tell me no again. Then I make them tell me no again. I just keep going. I go around and saying, well, I've gotten everything done to this point. I'm just going to keep going and just find a different way to get it done. That's what I want to do. I'm going to do it. So they can hold on to the past. Others can hold on to the past they like, but that's their choice, not mine. I'm not going to let that be my reality or my future.
What about in terms of your artistic inspiration? Like, do you feel like, you know, you're about to get married, you can see your son again. Do you feel like the kind of engine of your creative life has changed at all?
Of course it will. I mean, the way I saw things inside to create and write, I see things differently now because I didn't have a lot of things around me, so I went with what I felt at the time, what I saw. But now with so much going on, sometimes it can be hard to concentrate because there's so much more now in your head and more things going on in life. You see, it's kind of like you got to try to pick and analyze and section and weed out what you want to get right to because you can start writing something and just be all over the place and drawing and get distracted by another thought. So it's more of a challenge to get focused and stay focused. But it's not a problem. Because once I get these things ironed out, like I've just been going through, since January I've been going through a eviction process at the building that I own. Actually, the process started in March, it got done in June, so now I pretty much got out of the way, so a lot of stress has been lifted. The wedding will be done next week, and I'll be on vacation, honeymoon, so that stress has lifted. So I'm getting more of my focus back and getting more of my time back, more of my money back, and that's going to allow me to be able to put my mind on other things that I've been wanting to do anyway. So for the most part, life is life. And you just got to find ways to adjust to it and deal with it and navigate it. Well, you know, it's very beneficial for you and everybody around you. So if a problem comes up, it's only a problem because you've never seen that situation before. Take a breath and figure out how to deal with it and keep it moving so it doesn't sidetrack you as it did me once before. A lot of my friends, we were young, we got sidetracked by problems. And instead of just taking our time to analyze, we got mad. Or we just walked away and went a different direction all the time. We're supposed to go past that situation, and we didn't. We allowed it to make us go backwards and sideways when, no, that's not how you handle things. You deal with them, and you keep moving right through them, and you build on top of that. Mm-hmm. So that's how I'm living now, and that's what I am now.
Well, those are all the questions I have. Is there anything that you wanted to touch on that we didn't get to that you wanted to take the opportunity to mention or talk about or follow up on anything from the last time we spoke over email or just anything?
Nah, not really. Just to lay it out, I was released in December 2018, and it's been a really crazy process since then. A lot of things coming back. I had to realize that I had to reprogram myself again because a lot of information I collected over the years I don't need anymore. Mm-hmm. Like when I went in, I had forgotten a lot of things. I had to push a lot of things out of my mind because I had to adjust where I was at. So totally different world in there. And then when I got home, I ran into people and things, and a lot of people I had forgot. Oh, and they started describing to me how they know me. I realized they know me, but so many faces and names I lost track of because I had to replace a lot of that information with new stuff. Mm-hmm. And I had to do that again. Some people didn't understand that, and we had to part ways because they would say, well, you're home now. Let the jail stuff go. Mm-hmm. Forget about it. Keep it moving. Well, I've been in jail 25 years. It's not going to go away overnight. So I'm still going to have some stuff, some issues, stuff to work through, and things I might need to do that I probably average 45-year-old man shouldn't be doing or getting into, but I need to get that behind me, so just give me some time. So for those that couldn't understand that, I just keep it moving and let them go. But then I had to come to grips or come to a certain mature level in my own time, because in a lot of ways, people didn't realize, and brothers told me this, they got out before me, you still have a lot of thoughts and desires and ideas of that young guy that you had when you came in because your life got stopped. Mm. And you want to do those things now all the time. Now, at this age of 45, you can't do certain things anymore, or those things are just gone. Mm. But you have to figure them out and see it for yourself. Like, when I finally was home about maybe 6 months before I came into the city, my family had moved to Lansing, Illinois. I still have family, uncles and aunts in the city. Nobody wanted me to go to Chicago. Hey, listen, I got to go somewhere. No, Chicago's bad. I get all that, but I'm not going to those areas to do anything. When I finally came into the city, it kind of blew me out of the water seeing some of the old places, even seeing my own neighborhood. And I would get thoughts, you know what? I wonder what so-and-so doing now. I want to go. I can stop by and give them a call and see what they're doing. Then I have to remember, it's been 25 years. The phone number's changed. As a matter of fact, I don't even know the phone number anymore. They're probably not there anymore. They're not going that block. Their house is not even there. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot to deal with a lot of times. Everything is just gone. So as time has went on, I get better about it and forget it. But then something happens that reminds me it's been 25 years. So from there, I just kept moving. So I got out in December. Got to CDL school in March 2019, graduated in May, and I've been working ever since and going from this job to that job. And then I got my hazmat license, then I bought me some property, so I'm a landlord, 2-flat unit over on the southeast side of Chicago, and I'm about to get married, and just set up a lot of things, life insurance policies, my pension plan, 401k savings and things like that. Looking to acquire some other properties. I have younger brothers and sisters that are also property owners and investors and things like that. So for every year for me, it was always a process of doing this year, doing that this year, doing that this year. And the ultimate goal down the line would be to, you know, see if I can get a clemency granted. Can't get back that time. It's the most important thing, but I'm trying to put things back in perspective and back in order to where I can get other things done as well, the way I want it. So that's basically it. So for anybody else, it may go through anything. You got to just deal with the situation that falls in front of you. Don't run away from it. Work your way through it. And on the other side of it, you understand why it was necessary for you to fight through that and not just run away from it or allow it to break you down. You allow yourself to be broken, it just gets worse.
Can you say more about, I'm really intrigued by this thing because I feel the same way about like the emotional impact of going to a place, a physical place that you remember a certain way. And not only is it different, but in a lot of ways it's been completely erased. Like you go to certain areas, you go see a house, it's gone, it's flattened, it's something else there, whatever,
right.
Whatever it be. Can you say more about that, about what that was like to come back to places that you remember in your mind's eye exactly how it looked and now it doesn't even resemble that space anymore?
Well, when that happens, the first thing that comes to mind is all the memories attached to the area. Mm-hmm. I grew up on the street where my father's parents stayed on one side of the street and my mom's parents stayed on the other side. Mm-hmm. My mother and father met when they were 10 years old. They've been together ever since. Mm-hmm. So I knew a bunch of family members on both sides of the streets. And all the other neighbors were elders that grew up with my grandparents. And I come back now, I've been hearing things over the years, but I come back now, a lot of those houses are vacant lots or empty. Most of the people died. My grandparents moved on, I mean, but the thing about it, a lot of the elders, they lived to be in their 90s, late 80s, and they died. But, and then, you know, other people come in, whether they're kids or somebody else owns the property or somebody else renting, it's complete. They're not taking care of anything. So it looks complete opposite. And it's a process sometimes. A lot of times I'll be stuck. I just sit down and pause for a while and just going over things in my head what I remember about this area. Like, wow, it's been 25 years. Am I okay, really? Am I going to make it okay? Because I've missed a lot. Some brothers or some people get caught up in the fact that, man, I missed that on so much I have to catch up or make up for it. And that's a mistake because you never will. Mm-hmm. You just end up going down a road that's going to send you back to where you came from. And some brothers just like going back and forth and start over again. I know what it is. Maybe it's a form of being institutionalized. I don't know. But I never want to go back to that situation. But going back to those areas and things being different and people just being gone, sometimes it causes you to pause and sit still for a little while. Kind of knocks you on your ass when you realize, yeah. Yeah, I mean, but life goes on. Life keeps moving.